Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the only tropical fish podcast that is hosted live on the air. Join the passionate tropical fish keeper, Aqua Alex Cardinelli, for a fun and educational tropical fish episode. This is the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, where freshwater and saltwater fish and aquariums are discussed. Aqua Alex has over 12 years of fish keeping experience and over 3 years of podcasting experience. He will show you his passion for tropical fish with this episode. You can call in live at 516-418-5674 to chat tropical fish and join the chat. Now, let's chat fish. Here's Aqua Alex live from his fish room next to his 125-gallon aquarium in West Palm Beach, Florida. Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast is now live.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stellhorn, longtime listener of the Aquatic Wetline and Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. It's time to kick start the third season and the seventh year of the longest running tropical fish podcast. Coming up live right now on the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast is the season three premiere featuring three special fish guests, Monster Fish Chat, Saltwater Fish Chat, and more. Fish keepers are encouraged to call live at 516-418-5674 to ask any fish questions or join the chat. The fun begins now. Here's Aqua Alex.
Hello, tropical fish keepers, and welcome to an all-new season of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Welcome to the Season 3 premiere of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast and the first episode of a new decade, the first episode of 2020. I'm your host, Aqua Alex Cardinelli. I promise to deliver quality episodes this season, and 2020 will be an awesome, exciting year for you, the tropical fish keepers. Now, as you heard as the show went on the air, I am the longest-running aquarium podcast. I've been doing this since 2013 with Aquatic Wetline. This year will mark my seventh year as a tropical fish podcast host. So, 7 long years I've been doing Aquarium Podcast. I started in 2013 with Aquatic Wetline, and now in 2020, we have Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast and my third season. I am speaking from the heart when I say I love all the support I have been given by some wonderful fish keepers. I really appreciate all the love and support you're showing my show, and I appreciate you listening to all of my episodes. I've met some awesome people, and I look forward to seeing what the future holds here in Season 3 and 2020 for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. One thing for sure is I will do my best to make Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast even more popular. Tonight, to get us started, I put together an action-packed tropical fish show for all of you fish keepers to enjoy. Season 3 is going to kick off in a big way. I have some awesome special guests, and I will be chatting about many different species of fish for fish keepers of all interest in the aquarium hobby. Plus, open phone lines for tropical fish keepers to call in and ask me a question or join the tropical fish chat. So here's what's planned for the special episode today. Our first special guest is going to be aquatic guru Dustin Jay. Dustin is the owner of Facebook fish group Aquatic Gurus. He will be here to promote his Facebook group and discuss his love for the hobby and his monster pond, which has peacock bass and red-tailed catfish. The next special guest is my good friend, Matt Thibodeau, who has a YouTube channel dedicated to tropical fish and his pets. Matt Dibidoo is going to tell us about his YouTube channel and his love of tropical fish and other pets as well. I'm going to have a chat on monster fish. I'm going to talk about freshwater sleeper gobies, like the jade goby and the water cow goby. I'm going to talk about gars. I'm also going to have saltwater fish chat, where I'll talk about fox face rabbit fish and maroon clownfish. And I'm also going to talk about brackish water fish. And the brackish water fish I'm going to talk about is scats. And then I'm going to talk about goldfish, because a lot of you have asked me to talk about goldfish. And today I'm going to answer the controversial question, do goldfish belong in bowls? Now, if you have a tropical fish question during the show, you can call in. You got a tropical fish question you want answered by me, or you want to join the chat, call in live at 516-418-5674. I welcome any fish keeper to call into the show and join the fun. And our main event today, our final guest, is going to be Off the Deep End Aquatics' very own Michael Terrell, who joins me to discuss one of my personal favorite fish, and that is the majestic silver arowana. So you're also going to learn about silver arowanas on today's episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, the Season 3 premiere. So let's go ahead and get started, because we have an action-packed show coming your way. It's time for our first fish-keeping guest of 2020 here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Are you ready for our first guest of the new decade for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast? Well, it's time to interview our first guest of 2020. Our first guest is the owner and founder of a wonderful Facebook tropical fish group called Aquatic Gurus. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dustin Jay, the Aquatic Guru, to Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing great. I'm living in Florida, enjoying the life.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, when and how did you get into the aquarium hobby?
So, I've been in the hobby here now for, gosh, it's been about 5 years now. My wife actually was the one that got me into it. We were walking around PetSmart. She goes, "Hey, we should get a fish tank." And off we went.
Nice. So what were some of your first fish?
First fish we had was actually some mollies with some ghost shrimp, I believe, if I remember right. Oh, and some bala sharks, too. That's right.
Oh, nice. Bala sharks are pretty cool. They're one of my personal favorites.
Nice.
Yeah, what are some of the lessons? Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, we went from that to planet tanks and monster fish.
Nice. That sounds cool. I love monster fish.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the lessons you learned in the aquarium hobby?
Some of the lessons I learned are definitely, take advice from all angles, realistically. You know, do your own research and kind of, search some websites and read some books even and stuff like that. Definitely don't be afraid to ask people. That's kind of why I started the Aquatic Gurus group in the first place, was, to kind of give people a direction to go.
Sounds good. And I definitely recommend all of our listeners check out the Facebook group Aquatic Gurus. Why would you recommend people to check out your group?
Well, for one, we definitely have a lot of high-quality experience, in my opinion. A lot of fast knowledge in different, categories for sure. Everything from, your basic small stuff down to single-keeping fish, such as, like, bettas or, like, bigger stuff, even like red devils and dovies, stuff like that, all the way up to, keeping red-tailed catfish and axolotls and, kind of a playing field of all types of cards, realistically.
Awesome. So there's something for every fish keeper out there.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
What are some of your favorite fish?
I have to say by far one of my favorites is definitely the red-tailed catfish. As much as they take to keep them, they are by far one of my favorite fish. They're super personable, definitely very friendly versus a lot of other fish. I mean, it's kind of like having a dog that swims in the water all the time.
Nice. Red-tailed cats are awesome. You're one of few people who can actually adequately keep a red-tailed cat.
Yep, exactly. That's why I went with the pool idea. It's really, you know, it's really simple. It's easy to upgrade because the pricing isn't, you know, insane. You know, you don't have to go building a $5,000 setup or something like that. You know, you just got to play your cards right, you know, and prepare, get a backup and stuff like that. That way you're prepared for the worst and the best.
Very true. So what are you currently keeping for fish now?
So now I keep everything from a betta. I do some shrimp breeding. I also keep a 75-gallon planted community tank with shrimp, a couple of different tetras. There's the Orange Von Rio tetras. I got some dwarf chain loaches in there as well. We also keep flower horn. I have a dragon puffer, a couple of axolotls as well. And then I also have the peacock bass along with the red-tailed catfish.
Very nice. So you have a wide variety of tropical fish.
Yep, exactly.
Do you see yourself ever getting into saltwater?
On the tip of my tongue, yes. I would definitely want to try saltwater for sure. I mean, maybe start small just so I can have something, you know, simple and basic and, you know, kind of go from there. But I definitely do want to get my toes in the sand on that one. Definitely just to learn the knowledge of it too, not just to, you know, say I did it, but to learn something out of the whole situation as well.
Awesome. So do you have any dream fish that you haven't kept yet but want to?
Yeah, I got to say stingrays definitely is one of my dream creatures I want.
That's a great choice. I love the freshwater stingrays, especially the Matoros.
Absolutely. Those ones, and then some of the hybrids they've been coming out with lately have had some really, really neat patterns on them as well.
It's a shame that they're illegal here in Florida. Otherwise, I'd get a Matoro.
Oh, yeah, that's right. In Florida, they are illegal. Yeah, I live up here in Minnesota, so we deal with the, you know, we got the winter blocking us from, you know, not being able to keep so many things. Because not many things can survive up here once the winter comes.
That's true. So tell us about your monster pond. What do you have in it?
So in the monster pond, which currently is about 500 gallons full, we do have two red-tailed catfish. The bigger one's around 21 to 22 inches. The next size down is closer to 18 inches. And then we also have a tiger shovelnose red-tailed cat hybrid that's about 22 inches. And then we have two peacock bass, Oscillaris type, that are also about 18 inches as well.
Very nice. Peacock bass are interesting. Were you able to get them off eating off of live foods?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually have mine hand feeding.
Nice. What are they eating?
So I feed them a variety of foods from tilapia, Alaskan pollock, shrimp. We've tried a couple other things such as like massivar pellets, and they do eat them, but they do make a disaster of the pool itself.
Nice. Red-tailed cats are interesting. If I were to set up a pool pond, I definitely want a red-tailed cat. What would you say to the average fish keeper who wants to keep red-tailed catfish?
To the average person, I would definitely say, you know, do a lot of research. There's a lot of things that, you know, a lot of fear mongering out there as well that will, you know, people will scare you from keeping things that are realistically capable of being kept. It's just, you have to take the extra, you know, you have to go the extra length in order to keep them, you know, such as a big area of space, which is, you know, not necessarily the gallons isn't the important part. It's mostly the footprint of it. It needs to be a long, wide tank, and, you know, a couple feet deep at least. So ponds are ideal realistically, because you can have, you know, monster fish in them, but still have the space. And then the other thing would be definitely prepare for the cost of food. Like Thor, my big red-tailed catfish, he'll eat an entire tilapia fillet in one bite. So they do eat a lot, take up a lot of space. As far as messiness, they're not really that dirty. I mean, you know, I definitely need some cleaning here and there, but definitely not a hard fish to take care of either. They're pretty hardy and stuff like that. Just, you know, clean water, space, and plenty of food.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy the red-tailed cat. They are very cool catfish and very beautiful. And like you said earlier, they're very personable.
Yep. Yeah, mine are like puppies, though. Whenever I go out there with, and even without food, they think I got food. But they'll swim around my fingers and stuff like that. I can put my hand in the water, and they'll just kind of swim underneath it as I'm like petting them, basically. And they're honestly a joy to have.
My personal favorite catfish that is similar to the red tail is the tiger shovelnose. Have you ever kept any?
Yeah. We actually, I used to have a smaller one. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. He got really, really bad hick. We tried treating him in every possible way we could, and that's how I ended up with the hybrid fish. As I went into the fish store to look and see if I could get another tiger shovelnose that was a little bit bigger, hopefully, and a little tougher. When you do get them small, they're a little more sensitive. But anyways, I went down to the local fish store here, and that's how they ended up. I ended up getting Loki, the tiger shovelnose redtail hybrid.
Nice. I love the tiger shovelnose redtail hybrids as well. They're pretty interesting.
Yep. Yeah, he's definitely an aggressive fish, but he's kind of been calming down. That's how he got his name as well. He's just that he's that greedy, kind of fighty one.
Now, peacock bass are one of my personal favorite cichlids. I enjoy peacock bass. So what would you say to people who want to keep peacock bass?
I would have to say about the same thing, you know, just a large footprint, because, I mean, they're I don't know if anybody that's on your channel or on your station here has heard or seen any of the videos of them eating and stuff like that, but when I feed them in my pool pond, for example, they come shooting across the pond pretty darn quick. So, I mean, my biggest thing would be space for sure. They definitely, you know, they definitely got some wallop behind their back fin. So,
awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today?
I think that kind of settles it. The other thing I guess I would suggest is make sure you guys all check out the Aquatic Gurus group and, you know, get in there and don't be afraid to talk. We're all willing to talk about whatever. So,
awesome. You also have a YouTube channel, right?
Yep, I also have a YouTube as well. It's Aquatic Guru at YouTube. On there, you see a lot of the footage of like me feeding the peacock bass and kind of playing around with the red tails. And I do also show all my other stuff as well, along with some teaching videos here and there, where I'll show you like how to paint tanks and stuff like that too.
Awesome. So definitely check out Aquatic Gurus on Facebook. Join that group. You're going to love it. I'm a member of it, and I highly recommend it. And also, subscribe to Aquatic Guru on YouTube. Thank you so much for being here on today's episode. I really enjoyed having you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, man.
You have a great night.
You as well.
All right, that was our very first guest of today's episode. I want to thank Dustin Jay for agreeing to come on the show. He was a fantastic guest, and we have two more guests scheduled for our show. Right now, we're going to start talking about monster fish, but I have a caller I see has called into the show, so I'm going to answer the caller first. Hi, you're now live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Alex. Hi, it's Patrick. I'm calling from San Diego, California. I just want to say I'm a big fan of the show, and I want to give a shout-out to my brother-in-law, Mikey. He's in Brooklyn. He's a big fan of your show, and he turned me on to your broadcast. So I really appreciate all that you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate your kind words.
Kind of a crazy question. I have had experience with saltwater and freshwater fish in the past, but I had this idea. See, I've had a 125-gallon saltwater tank, but we remodeled the house a few years ago, and we had to let that go. But I always thought it would be a good idea to go into brackish. And I know there's a number of species. I know there's some kind of what jogged my my memory on this idea was stingrays. I know stingrays are a brackish species, and I know there's a couple of puffers that are brackish species. But here's my crazy thought. I have a 14,000-gallon saltwater swimming pool. Now, I know the salinity is not like the ocean, but it's pretty much the same as brackish. Has anybody ever tried putting brackish species in a swimming pool? Because I thought that would be awesome to be able to swim with some of these fish. Has anybody ever tried that?
Not that I know of, but it would be pretty cool. You get to swim with some brackish water fish.
Yeah, I just wondered if any of your other guests have ever heard of any such idea.
Not that I'm aware of, not that I know of, but it sounds like a great idea.
Maybe that could be a topic of conversation on a future broadcast.
Yeah, it definitely could be one. Thank you so much for calling in.
All right, you take care, Alex. You have a great night.
You too. All right, so now we're going to talk about our first species of monster fish, and that's going to be a sleeper goby. Now, when people think of gobies, they think of saltwater gobies or brackish gobies, and that's because gobies are more popular and more well-known in saltwater and in brackish water. And when I had saltwater aquariums, I had to have a goby of some sort, but that's not to say that freshwater doesn't have any gobies. A lot of the freshwater gobies are dwarf gobies. They stay small, but there are some that get to good size and can live in decent-sized aquariums, and that's the gobies that I'm going to talk about here on today's show. So the first goby that I'm going to talk about is called a jade goby or a jade sleeper goby. This fish used to be very popular back in the day. You used to see these fish a lot in local fish stores, but over the years they've kind of died down, and I found them to be kind of hard to get now. But luckily for me, they're very, very common down here in Florida. They actually live in Florida waterways, so they're very easy for me to get now. But back when I was living in Massachusetts, they were very hard to get. So I couldn't find any in Mass, but now I have a couple of them in my 125-gallon aquarium. The jade sleeper goby is a very nice freshwater fish. They have a lot of color, and I think if you're into monster fish like I am, this is the perfect fish for you. Now, jade gobies are found in North to South America along the Atlantic slope from North Carolina, USA, to southeastern Brazil, and they're found in freshwater and brackish water, so they can survive in pretty much any aquarium, whether it's freshwater or brackish water. They do get pretty big. A jade sleeper goby can reach anywhere from 14 inches to 24 inches, but generally in a home aquarium, they'll stay around a foot. So you're going to need a big aquarium for a jade goby. I'd say you're looking at maybe 125-gallon aquariums for one. You could possibly raise them in smaller aquariums, but they are an active fish. So you would like something in the 90-gallon to 125-gallon range. Obviously, the bigger the better for a jade goby because they are going to get about a foot and they grow kind of fast. So always keep that in mind. Water parameters for a jade goby, they can be in fresh water with a pH of 7.0 to 8.0 or brackish water with a very low salinity because in the wild they're found in both fresh water or brackish water. Now, keeping a jade goby is very simple. They are a very hardy fish to keep, so you should not have a problem keeping them. Just keep the water clean, do a lot of water changes, and have excellent filtration, and your jade sleeper goby should be good. You want to provide a lot of hiding spots for the jade goby because this fish is a fish that likes to hide. And if it doesn't have any place to hide, it will feel very insecure and possibly will jump out of the aquarium. Now, gobies of all species, from freshwater, brackish, and saltwater, are very good jumpers. So make sure you have a lid on your aquarium if you don't want to lose your jade goby, because they will jump out of the aquarium any chance they have, whether they have no hiding spots, or they feel stressed, or the water parameters are off, they will jump, or they just jump in nature. So make sure you have a tight lid on your aquarium because they will jump if given a chance. Now, tank mates, it really is important that tank mates should be of similar size and able to hold their own against jade gobies because jade gobies do get big and they have a ferocious diet and a ferocious appetite. They'll eat anything that can fit in their mouth, so don't put these in with smaller fish like tetras or danios or anything like that because they will eat them. Good tank mates for jade gobies include things like silver dollars, Mentonus or Mylia species, cichlids like Oscars, tinfoil barbs, bala sharks, things that get too big to be eaten. And feeding a jade goby is pretty simple. They're not hard to feed at all. They'll eat pretty much anything, but I recommend feeding them market shrimp, tilapia, bloodworms, Miesis shrimp, krill, and try to get them on pellets because pellets is a good part of their diet in a home aquarium. They're not picky eaters at all. I've got mine eating everything that I feed. He'll even eat flakes that I feed to my small tinfoil barbs right now. So they're very easy to get eating. They might take a couple days to adjust to your aquarium if they're new, and they might not eat right away. That's normal in new fish, but they'll eat once they get used to their aquarium. You shouldn't have a problem feeding a jade goby. So that is the jade sleeper goby, some information on them. Another freshwater goby that was common a couple years ago is the water cow goby. This one gets huge. A water cow goby can grow up to 2 feet or more, and they need a big tank as well. Pretty much same care for a jade goby. Marbled goby comes from China, and they get pretty large as well, and they're pretty aggressive. They look like a wolfish, but they get really big, and they need a huge aquarium as well. So I'm going to be doing a show on jade sleeper gobies in the future and other sleeper gobies as well, but today I figured I'd just introduce you to freshwater gobies. I am going to have a show on all different types of freshwater gobies coming up in the future here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. So if you have any questions on tropical fish or anything that I talk about today, you can call in live at 516-418-5674. Right now, I want to talk about the controversial question that all of you guys have been asking me to answer. Do goldfish belong in aquarium bowls? Now, one thing about goldfish most people don't know is they don't have a stomach. So when they eat, they're going to constantly produce a lot of waste, and that waste turns into ammonia. And when you have ammonia in a bowl that has no filter, the water is going to get pretty deadly to the fish, as toxins are going to continue to build up to the point where the fish isn't going to be able to breathe, and then he's going to start getting burns on his scales. And the goldfish will eventually die. So goldfish do not belong in bowls because they are constant waste producers because they don't have a stomach. Also, goldfish get pretty large. A goldfish, I'm talking about a feeder goldfish, can grow anywhere from 12 inches to 2 feet in length. Fancy goldfish get pretty big as well. They can get about 8 inches. So, no, goldfish do not belong in bowls, and they should not be kept in bowls because they just get too large and they produce too much waste. So I don't know where the myth of keeping goldfish in bowls began, but it is just cruel to the fish, and I definitely would not recommend keeping goldfish in bowls. The same thing can be said for bettas. I wouldn't recommend keeping bettas in a bowl. There's really no swimming space for them. Bettas belong in 5-gallon aquariums, 10-gallon aquariums, etc. They have a lot of kits nowadays that you can get for bettas. If you just go to Petco or PetSmart or Pet Supermarket or Pet Supplies Plus, they have kits you can get for bettas, aquarium kits, and they're pretty affordable as well. So there's no reason why you shouldn't have a betta in an aquarium if you really were interested in having a betta. All right, so we're going to talk about our one species of brackish water fish that I'm going to talk about on today's show. I am going to be doing brackish water fish series here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. I have a guest who is very popular, and he knows a lot about brackish water fish. He'll be coming on here occasionally to talk about brackish water fish. But today's brackish water fish I'm going to talk about is known as the scat. And the scat is also known as Argus fish and spotted scats. Scats are one of the most popular species of brackish water aquarium fish. They are characterized by their square-shaped and compressed bodies. The scat's dorsal fins are composed of hard rays, which are mildly poisonous. The scat's body is often silver-green or silver-brown in color and has large black or brownish-red spots. Now, scats originate from the brackish water estuaries of Australia and Southeast Asia. They come in two basic color morphs, green scats and ruby scats. They are extremely peaceful and thrive when kept in large schools of six or more fish. They get up to 10 inches in length, so they're going to need adequate space and should be therefore raised in large aquariums. They're very active, and they enjoy aquariums with large open swimming spaces. Now, in the wild, scats inhabit mangroves and other estuaries and prefer aquariums with plenty of plants and hiding spaces. Now, scats are gregarious eaters, and they, like goldfish, produce a significant amount of waste. They are also extremely sensitive to nitrate levels. Therefore, it is important that the scat's aquarium has adequate filtration and that weekly water changes are carried out. These fish are extremely peaceful and make excellent additions to most brackish water community aquariums. They do great with other brackish water fish like green spotted puffers, figure eight puffers, monos, and other brackish water fish. They'll eat pretty much anything from market shrimp to tilapia to algae, flakes, brine shrimp, and dry seaweed. They are omnivores. So that's some information on the scat, a fish I have personally yet to keep. I haven't had a scat because I haven't had a brackish water aquarium yet, but I definitely plan on having a brackish water aquarium sometime soon. Now, the interesting thing about scats is a lot of people like to keep them in freshwater because as juveniles, they do in the wild tend to go into freshwater rivers and lakes for a little while, but then they migrate back towards the brackish water estuaries. So they can live in freshwater as juveniles, but in order for them to live their best lives, they belong in brackish water for their whole lives. They can also even be adjusted to salt water because they do sometimes in the wild travel to the ocean as well. So that's the information on scats. Now we're going to talk about another monster fish that I like, and that is the gar. There are many different species of gar, and most species of gar grow insanely huge, especially the alligator gar. The alligator gar does not belong in the aquarium hobby, in my opinion, because of the size it reaches. Now, alligator gars are banned, or they're illegal to keep here in Florida in the aquarium hobby, so I won't be able to tell you what it's like to keep an alligator gar, but Florida gars, spotted long-nosed gars, and other types of gars, they're pretty interesting fish to keep in aquariums, but keep in mind, these gars do get really large, and they get to be about 2 feet or more. So they need 125-gallon aquariums up to 180-gallon aquariums. They'll eat pretty much anything. They're omnivores, so I recommend feeding gars a lot of meaty foods and give them a good diet, which includes shrimp, tilapia, krill, and see if you can get them to even eat bloodworms, earthworms, and insects. Give your gar the best diet. And I have an episode on gars lined up pretty soon in the future. I actually have a guest who's going to be coming on to talk about gars. So I'm going to save all the gar information for that particular episode. So coming up on all my episodes for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, I'm going to play songs from up-and-coming music artists. So today, I have two songs that I'm going to play for you that are done by music artists up and coming from around the world. We're going to play those two songs, and then we're going to have our next guest here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast Season 3 premiere.
You, I belong.
It's time for our next guest here on the Season 3 premiere of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. And I'm very excited to have this guest on because he's a very, very good close friend of mine. And he's from Springfield, Massachusetts. He has a YouTube channel that is dedicated to pets and tropical fish. So please welcome to Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast for the very first time, Matt Dibidoo. Matt, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good to hear, yes.
How's the weather down there?
It's actually been really well, actually. It hasn't been cold. I think it's starting to actually feel like spring. Spring has come early.
That's good.
Yeah.
What kind of pets do you have?
All right, well, I have mostly aquatic animals. I have some axolotls. I have my betta fish, some aquatic turtles. I have a bunch of freshwater fish, and then I have other animals like my hermit crabs. I have a bearded dragon, and then a cat and a dog, the more traditional animals, you could say.
That's cool. So how did you get into having pets?
I started liking animals when I was really young, and it's kind of impossible to get every single animal that you want. So I did ask my parents, but being a kid living in their house, I was only allowed to keep specific animals. We had a cat, a dog, and then my parents allowed me to get some fish. So I started with betta fish and, you know, just went from there. It's always been like a relaxing thing for me to take care of animals. When I'm bored, you know, I'll take care of my animals. I'll clean a fish tank or I'll look at them, you know, just stuff like that. It relaxes me overall, yeah.
That's awesome. I definitely agree with you. Pets and tropical fish are relaxing. So exactly how did you get into the tropical fish hobby?
Well, for that reason, my parents, they didn't allow me to get much, so they allowed me to get a betta fish once, and I started with betta fish. I had two betta fish. My brother had one, I had one. I kind of took care of both, and from there, I kind of just expanded on that. I started keeping goldfish shortly after that. Then I started keeping fiddler crabs. I'm sure you know what those are. And from there, I kind of just explored other fish. I started studying different species of fish, and from there, I just, you know, I've gotten a lot over the last few years, and, you know, that's how I started.
That's awesome. I was kind of born into the fish hobby, so I had no choice other than keeping fish.
Yeah, because your parents keep them, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
It's been a hobby my whole life, and I still love it.
Yeah, well, you're also very educated as well, so that's a good thing.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite fish that you have?
I really like my hillstream loaches. You know what those are, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I like those. I love the way that they move. I love the way that they eat. I love the way that they behave. I also really like my betta fish. You know that I actually raise baby betta fish. So I would say that I love my hillstream loaches, but I also love the fish that I raise. I feel much more, a much closer connection to them because you're raising them, so you feel responsible for getting them to where they are. So I really love my betta fish that I actually raised about a year ago. They're actually turning into adults now, so I would say that they're probably one of my favorites, aside from the hillstream loaches.
Nice, that's awesome. It's always great raising fish into adulthood.
Yeah, it's very rewarding.
How are my clown loaches doing?
They're actually good. I still have them, and it's so funny because the two that I had before, you gave me your two, you can tell them apart because mine are a little smaller than yours. But they all have adapted and adjusted very well to each other. So they all swim in their little school. They all play and they all go into the little hive together. It's actually really fun. They're doing good.
That's awesome. It's nice that my clown loaches went to a good home because I couldn't bring them with me during our move.
Yeah, they're doing a lot. They're doing very well. They adjusted a little weird at first. They obviously weren't as active because new fish, new tank. But they definitely did. They grew accustomed to the other fish in there.
Nice. So I know that you also have aquatic turtles. How hard are turtles to keep?
I wouldn't say that they're not hard, but they require a lot of work. They require water changes weekly, if not twice a week. They require a lot of spot cleaning. I spot clean my actual turtle tank at least twice a day. Sometimes I have to do it more, but they're not too hard. They're not very picky when you're feeding them. They'll eat, you know, anything. They'll eat meat, they'll eat vegetables, things like that. But I would say that the hardest thing about keeping them is just keeping the water clean and just making sure that the environment is safe and healthy for them to thrive in, because, they could live in dirty water, but obviously dirty water smells. You're not going to have a good life in dirty water. So they're not too difficult as long as you're staying on top of it, but they're also not beginners either, you know.
Sounds good. So it sounds like if you're dedicated to keeping them and you do all the right things, they're pretty easy.
Yeah, as long as you put the work in, then the outcome will ultimately be for the best. But it does require a lot of work. I spend a lot of time, you know, between feeding them and between cleaning the tank and doing the water change. It takes a lot of time, but it's worth it for me.
What do you like best about turtles?
I think just the way that they, just watching their behavior, that's probably one of my favorites. The way that they swim is also amazing. You know, if you actually look at them, it's so relaxing to just see them swim around in their tank. And I actually just upgraded their tank. They have a huge tank now, which I think I showed you a while back. They love it. They swim around so much more in there and they're happier. And the way that they sleep is also really funny. I have a bunch of hanging plants on the back of the aquarium. And at nighttime, as soon as I turn the heat lamp off, they know right where to go. They go right to the hanging plants. They kind of cling onto them and hold onto them. And their body stays under and their little head comes up from the water and their eyes close. It's just, it's the cutest little thing.
That's pretty cool. Maybe one day I'll keep aquatic turtles.
You should.
In the future, hopefully.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it.
Now, I know you have a fantastic YouTube channel that I'm subscribed to, and I definitely recommend all of our listeners subscribe to it. What made you start up a YouTube channel?
Well, it was kind of accidental, to be honest. I started my YouTube channel doing, like, traveling vlogs and things like that. I kind of just recorded everything that I did so that I can remember the memories and remember the moments. But then I actually ordered from Reptile City. I don't know if you remember. It was a company that I had ordered from last year, and I actually had a very hard time with this specific company. And I kind of just made a video calling the company out in hopes to get, you know, the answers that I wanted and to get the outcome that I wanted. And from there, I kind of just got a lot of popularity from that specific video. A lot of people were asking me to make more. So it kind of just grew from that specific video. So that's how I started. And then from there, I've been posting weekly ever since.
That's awesome. Yeah, you have a wonderful channel. So would you mind telling our listeners where they can find you on YouTube?
Yeah, you can search my name. It's just my name, Matt Thibodeau, Thibodeau. And I post a lot of fun videos involving my animals. It revolves around my animals. I'm also starting to do more like news-related things in the animal-keeping community. I'm actually working on a couple things right now that I'm focusing on. So it's going to be like not only just me talking about and showing my animals, but also giving tips on how to keep certain animals while incorporating, you know, animal related news into the channel as well.
Yeah, you have some awesome videos, especially on Globetas and the recent airline animal video. So you have some pretty good stuff. I recommend all of our listeners check it out.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, who are some of your favorite YouTubers?
My favorite YouTubers. Do you know who Rachel O'Leary is on YouTube?
Yes.
I love her channel because it encompasses what fish keeping really is, and she is so good at informing people how to keep specific fish and how to work with them and how to breed them, and I just love the updates that she provides and just the whole basis of her channel, which is informing people on how to care for specific fish. So I really like her channel. I also follow a smaller YouTube channel. His name is called Kaler's Aquatics. I think he only has like 1,000 subscribers, but he's also a really good channel. He's very involved in the fish keeping community on YouTube. And his channel isn't as informative as the other ones. His is mostly just showing off his fish, which are actually beautiful. His tanks are all really nice. So I watch them too a lot. I also watch your videos too, so.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate the support.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, Rachel O'Leary is a wonderful lady. She has a lot of great information, and she keeps all different sorts of nano fish and even has a couple monsters.
Yeah, her monster fish are huge. She's had those for a very, very long time. I'm so amazed. Every time I watch her videos, I love them.
Yeah, I love the monster fish. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, they really are.
Will you ever keep monster fish in the future?
Probably. If I ever get the space to keep them properly, I most likely will. As long as I have enough space to house everything in a correct way and humane way, then, yeah. If it was up to me, I would have every fish in the world if I could house them correctly.
It's awesome to see another friend passionate for the aquarium hobby.
Yeah. Well, I get a lot of information from you, too. Every time I have, like, questions or anything, I always come to you, and you always have an answer to my question. So you're also a lot of help.
Yeah, I enjoy chatting fish with people and helping them because a lot of people help me on my way up, so I like to return the favor.
Yes, and you're very educated, so thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
So why would you recommend people to check out your channel?
Well, my videos, I try to make them, as you know, as most informative as I can. I try to provide as much information as I can while also providing my own personal experience with things. I'm not the kind of person that just says, okay, well, everyone is saying this, so do this. You have to do this. I'm more of, okay, they're saying do this, but let me try it my way and let's see if I can, you know, do it this way so that we don't have to stick to the same thing that everyone's been doing for years and years and years. So my channel is a ton of information, but it's also a lot of personal experience as well. And I think that's what is needed, especially today, because, you know, it's not always good to stick with old ways of doing things. You know, it's sometimes good to get a new perspective. So my channel is very informative based on facts and also experience as well. So if people want my personal experience, you know, it's good to subscribe to me.
That sounds great. Do you have anything else you want to talk about or any questions you want to ask me?
Okay, my question for you. You have been saying that you're going to get a saltwater tank.
Yes.
What is your favorite saltwater fish that you want to keep when you get a saltwater tank?
Oh, that's a tough question, but from the top of my head right now, I'm going to say a dogface puffer.
Yeah, I love those. I think I actually caught one of those when I was on vacation last summer. I caught a puffer fish when I was fishing off the coast of North Carolina.
Nice.
But I don't know if it was a dogface. I'd have to go back and look. But puffer fish are really cool.
Yeah, the dogface puffers, they're adorable. They look like little puppies.
Yeah. Oh, and the little trigger fish. I love those.
Yeah, the triggers are pretty cool, too, especially the clown trigger.
Yeah, they're awesome. There's so many different ones. They're all beautiful.
I love saltwater fish, too.
Yeah. Well, I want to get a saltwater tank in the future. It's just they require a lot more time and care and caution, you know, than freshwater fish. And I'm just nervous to take that on quite yet, you know, right now. But eventually I'll get there.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more work, but it's not that bad.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I've done it.
Yeah, I'm sure that. I'm sure it's doable. Yeah.
It's fun. Well, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on our show today. You did a great job.
Thank you. Anytime.
I had a blast chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And all of our listeners, make sure you check out his YouTube channel, Matt Dibidoo. I'll have the link in the description of today's episode, so definitely go check it out and subscribe and watch all of his amazing videos. Thank you, Matt, for being here. It was a pleasure having you.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
So I want to thank my good friend Matt Dibidoo for being our second guest here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast Season 3 2020 Premiere. It's been a great show so far, and it's going to continue because coming up soon, we're going to have our final guest, Michael Terrell, who's going to talk to us about one of my personal favorite fish and a fish I'm going to be getting really soon, a silver arowana. But we're also going to be talking about other species of fish coming up really soon, right after this quick commercial break.
Hey guys, my name is Carter Moon and I am a social media influencer and a current author. Not only do I make fun YouTube content, but I also just published a book called The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter. It is a mystery book where it's about a young man who moves from his home country to the United States to get assimilated to the hearing world, but unluckily he encounters an interpreter and he grew later to like, but then is later found missing and goes dead under mystery circumstances. Check out the book in store.bookbaby.com and search up The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter, or you can go on Google and search up The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter and you can find a link there, or you can find a hard copy version. Also, check out my YouTube channel in the link of my bio in @Paul_Aramunis, which is called Paul Aramuni Vlogs. Thanks, and I hope to see you guys along this journey with me.
Yes, that's right. My good friend Paul has a book that I think you guys should check out. It's called The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter, a very good book. I have the link to the book in my episode description. You guys can check that out and also purchase the book if you like. It's a great book. Also, Paul and I did an amazing YouTube cooking video this week. It's on his channel right now. Go check it out, Paul Aramuni Vlogs on YouTube, and you can see us make our delicious ribeye steak and lasagna. A really great video, and I think you'll enjoy it, so go check that out. Also, there's a chicken parm cooking video and a red velvet cheesecake brownie cooking video on that channel. So the fish chat continues right after this.
I don't know why you called or what you were saying about growing old. Didn't know what else to do to stand in line and then I'll take a bullet for you. But have you seen the news today? There's a whole lot of talk I don't understand. But one man can take the life of another man. One man can take the life of another man. Man, I don't understand today. Summertime and memories escaping through the fields like they do on TV. Wouldn't be British to do. Does anybody know what that means? I ask of you. Have you seen the news today? There's a whole lot. One man can take the life of another man. One man can take the life of another man. Man, I don't understand today. Just whole lot of talk I don't understand. Of one man can take the life of another man. One man can take the life of another man. A man I don't understand today.
All right, we're back here live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast Season 3 2020 premiere. We're having an epic show so far. If you've been listening live and you have any tropical fish questions, you can call in at 516-418-5674. Right now we're going to get back into our tropical fish talk, and I'm going to talk about some saltwater fish now. And then we're going to get to our last and final guest, our main event guest of the evening. So one of my personal favorite saltwater fish is the fox-faced rabbit fish. Now, the fox-faced rabbit fish has many different species. A lot of people think of fox-faced rabbit fish just as the simple fox-faced lull. But there are more than one species of foxface. You have the regular foxface lull. You have the one-spot foxface, also known as the blotched foxface. You also have the magnificent foxface, which is a gray-colored, gray to silver-colored foxface that has a lot of nice coloration, gray, silver, yellow, and red. And also you have the bicolor foxface, which is yellow and black, which is a very beautiful colored fish. I really like the bicolor foxface. Now, foxface rabbit fish are perfect for saltwater aquariums, aquariums of all types, fish only with live rock, or sometimes they're great in reef aquariums. You just have to be very cautious with foxface rabbit fish in reef aquariums because they are known to nip at corals. So always keep that in mind. But the ones that don't nip at corals are great in your aquarium. It just depends on species to species of different fish. Just like humans have different personalities, fish have different personalities as well. So keep that in mind. Now, foxface do get really big, so I don't recommend them for anything smaller than a 75-gallon saltwater aquarium because these fish get pretty big. A foxface can get about a foot long, so they're going to need a tank of at least 90 gallons, and they grow kind of fast, so always keep that in mind. Now, the foxface will eat just about anything, but you want to give them a diet of algae. So you can give them algae wafers, you can give them spirulina brine shrimp. Now, spirulina brine shrimp is brine shrimp that has spirulina algae added to it. I'm trying to think of that food that I fed when I had saltwater. It's been a couple of years since they had saltwater, so I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Shoot, I can't remember it right now. Seaweed, you can feed them. And, I can't remember the name of that food. If I remember it before the end of today's show, I'll definitely mention it. It's like a green plant that you feed them. You get it at the pet stores and, oh, nori. Nori, yeah, fox faces love nori. And other fish like yellow tangs, and all sorts of tangs like the nori as well. So we're going to do an entire show dedicated to saltwater species, and I'm also going to do a show on foxface. Once I get back into saltwater, I'll be able to talk more in depth on saltwater fish, and especially the foxface. The foxface rabbit fish is one of my personal favorite saltwater fish, and I can't wait to have one again. I'm definitely going to have a magnificent foxface and maybe a bicolor foxface this time. And one of my plans is to have a tank with all different sorts of foxfaces. Obviously, it's going to need to be a big tank, but it probably can be done. I've seen people do it before, but I'm going to try doing it myself. And the last fish I'm going to talk about is my personal favorite clownfish. It's a maroon clownfish. Now, this clownfish does better by itself because it's a really aggressive clownfish, and you'll save money by just keeping one clownfish, because a maroon clownfish goes from anywhere from $15 to $50, depending on the type of clownfish you get. Maroon clowns are the gold stripe maroon, the white maroon, and the lightning maroon. They get to be about 7 inches, so they're one of the biggest clownfish out there. They're very aggressive, like I said. And one of the reasons a lot of people don't like maroons is because they're very hard to pair off. You can't pair a male or female successfully like you can with an Ocellaris or a Percula clown. Maroon clowns are very hard to pair, but I like having just one in my aquarium. They get to be about 7 inches, so they're a very nice clownfish. And they eat pretty much anything, so their care is similar to that of most clownfish. And like I said, they get to be about 7 inches. Very simple fish to keep. You're going to want to keep your maroon clownfish in at least a 29-gallon aquarium. Bigger, the better for your maroon clownfish. And we're going to do a show on maroon clownfish in the future. So before I get to my final guest, I would like to thank everybody for being a part of Season 3's premiere of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. This is episode number 489, which means we are getting closer to our 500th episode. And I'm happy to tell you on today's episode, prize giveaways. Yes, that's right. For the first time in a long time, I'm going to be doing prize giveaways on an episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. It all goes down on our 500th episode, which should take place in April, if I'm not struck by the coronavirus and pass away. But in all seriousness, our 500th episode will be taking place sometime middle or late April, and I'll have more information to come on our 500th episode in the next few weeks. I'm also going to be bringing back my live Fish Keeper question and answer show, where you can call in and ask questions, and I'll give you answers, and you can answer my questions. March 31st is going to be our first live Fish Keeper Q&A of Season 3, so that's going to be something to look forward to as well. So if anyone has any fish questions now or anything they'd like to say, you can call in 516-418-5674. I think right now it's time for our final guest of the evening, and I think you guys are going to enjoy this guest because this guest has been on the show before, and he did a great job when he was on the show before. But now he's going to talk to us about one of my personal favorite fish, and a fish I'm going to be getting in a couple of weeks, the silver arowana. So enjoy, folks. It's time for our main event here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast Season 3 premiere, and I'm really excited about this main event because I'm going to be talking about one of my personal favorite fish, along with a wonderful guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, Michael Tyrell. Michael, how are you doing today, sir?
Good. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great. I'm ready to talk about silver arowanas with you.
Me too, and thanks for having me back on.
You're welcome. So what do you like about silver arowanas?
I think it is a personality thing for me. There's something about having a topwater fish, though. Something about a fish that stays at the top water and has that dragon-like look to it, always ready to pounce at something on the water's surface. What do you think? How about you?
I like their personality as well, the way that they attack food, and I like the way they swim. They're very majestic, a very majestic fish.
Yes, very majestic. That's a good word for it.
I also like their dragon features as well.
Yeah, with the barbells and just the size of their scales. That's very cool.
They're a very awesome fish.
So you have a silver arowana right now?
No, I couldn't find one. The only ones I saw were babies with egg sacs, but I'm definitely going to be getting one soon.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to grow them out from that small. They probably shouldn't be sold that small, but a lot of shops do still sell them with the egg sacs on them.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if I want to get a silver or a black arowana still.
Ooh. Well, the good thing about the blacks is they tend to take a little longer to grow and they stay a little smaller. They're just expensive, but beautiful.
Yeah, they are a gorgeous arowana. I'll probably get a silver because down here blacks are illegal, I think.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think blacks and giardinis are illegal in Florida.
Oh, wow. I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting. I wonder why the silvers aren't.
I don't know. I'm glad they're not, though.
Yeah, I'm glad for you, too. I have six arowana right now. I have three albinos and three silvers.
Nice. The albinos are beautiful. I probably would get an albino.
Yeah, they really are. It's a different look, but still... Still, they're so beautiful, and some of them can get real, real orange, and others can be real, real yellow, like a banana. So it's pretty cool.
Nice. So what would you tell people who want silver arowanas?
The silvers get really big. So the first thing people usually ask is, how big of a tank do you need? As big as possible, obviously. You could plan on them getting close to 36 inches. You see a lot of 24-inch silver arowanas. That's really common. 36-inch is not as common, but they it does happen. So you should plan accordingly just in case you end up having a fish that gets that big. It's very possible. So the bigger the tank, the better. They do need a lot of swimming space, so although they're not a stiff-bodied fish and they can turn around in tight spaces, you still don't want to cram them in too much. So the more swimming space, the better, and make sure you got some really, really good lid or a net system. Really, a net would be most ideal for the top of the tank to help make sure that they do not jump out, because that is I would say that is the most common cause of death for the silver arowana in the aquarium. Is jumping out of the tank. So I've lost a couple that way, and I've tried really hard to make sure it doesn't happen, and it still happened. So yeah, tank size, and make sure you have a very secure lid.
I definitely agree 100% with you on both of those statements. Silver arowanas get big, so they need a large aquarium. The unfortunate thing about silver arowanas is they like to jump, like you said. I lost a couple due to jumping as well.
Yeah, so my last silver I lost due to jumping, and I thought I had an excellent lid system, but somehow it managed to find its way out, and it was 24 inches on the nose after measuring it, but it was a very unfortunate loss. It's very sad. It was notable that it was only 15 months that I had it, so it went from a little less than 3 inches to 24 inches in about 15 months. So they're fast growers and they are strong fish. So I'm still not sure how it got through my lids or where exactly it got out, but they find a way sometimes. They're known for it. So it's scary, and always worried about coming home and finding one on the floor. So the poor things are just prone to jumping and don't know any better.
Yeah, they like to jump in the wild to catch their prey.
Yep, they've been known to take down birds even.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's a very cool video of an Asian arowana jumping out of the water at a drone that's going around on the internet, and it just shows how high they can really jump. It must have jumped almost 4 feet out of the water. It's incredible.
So what would you say would be a good diet for silver arowanas?
So they're going to eat mostly small fish, crustaceans, like shrimp, things like that, and insects in the wild. So stick to a diet like that would be my best recommendation. And they're going to take a lot of different things pretty easily. If you can find a good healthy pellet that you can stick with or switch it up here and there, that's great. I like to feed a lot of shrimp, and I will sometimes marinate the shrimp in arowana vitamins, things like that. But crickets are another great one. I like fluval bug bites also, some of the floating ones. Great way to raise up some of the juveniles on the bug bites, and then you can switch them to a little bit of a heavier meat, more of a higher protein food once they get a little larger, so you can fill them up a little easier. But yeah, mostly insects and smaller fish, shrimp, things like that.
I agree 100% with that. They are a great fish to watch eat, especially when they're hungry, because they'll keep eating and eating and eating, and some of the times they'll look bloated after eating a lot.
Yes. Another notable thing that people often relate to diet is drop eye. People always talk about drop eye, different various reasons why they think that the arowana eye can sometimes drop down. So it's all speculation and different opinions and different people's experiences, really. But it is notable that the buildup behind the eye is fat. So the idea of not overfeeding the fish would be a good approach to take, as to not have the fish build up an abundance of fat. It might be worth trying, but when it comes down to it, things like drop eye or relatively are just genetics. There are a lot of silver arowanas found in the wild that even have drop eye. So wild caught silver arowana already has drop eye. So it's hard to say for sure, but we do know it's fat buildup. So that diet is important. At least get them everything they need. And if the eye drops, the eye drops. It's just something that doesn't really matter. It's just an aesthetic thing. Doesn't hurt the fish at all, but we don't really know if it affects the fish's eyesight or anything like that. So if we can try to avoid it, great.
Do you think drop eye makes silver arowanas less attractive?
Personally, no, but the internet would say otherwise. So many people think that it is a lot less attractive. They're clearly less symmetrical when you look at them straight on. So that is not a desirable trait for a lot of hobbyists who keep arowana, especially the Asian arowana, that they are more of a collectible fish. People really don't want them to get drop eye. But personally, it's never really bothered me. It doesn't seem to bother the fish. I think that's the most important part. However, we don't really know if it affects its eyesight, like I was saying before. So if we can avoid it just for the eyesight factor, that's great. But no, I don't personally think that it makes them less attractive.
I don't either. I think it looks pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it does. It gives them kind of a bad look to them, if you will. I do like it. And sometimes both eyes drop, and that's kind of cool too.
I agree.
I think that it's good that we embrace the idea of it, though, instead of looking at it in such a negative light. So I think that's good that you mentioned it, that you don't, it doesn't really bother you either. You don't think it looks bad.
That's true. Now, a lot of people who are into silver arowanas like to try keeping more than one together. Have you successfully kept more than one silver arowana together?
So far, so good. I can relate a recent experience of trying to grow three juvenile albino silvers out in the same tank. And with only three, I had one that was overly dominant and was beating up the other two too bad, and I had to separate them. So I found that separating them for a time and then trying it again with just the three still did not work. But what I ended up doing was, now I have six, like I said, but only five are together at the moment. What I ended up doing was I moved all five into a different tank all together, so at the same exact time. So they kind of had to reestablish a pecking order. There was no fish that was already established in the tank that could be more dominant. So it has worked very well, the five of them together. It could just be the additional number over the three that was what worked more, or it could have something to do with also moving them all at once to the same tank. I'm not really sure, but the more the better if you're going to try a group. And of course, if you got the more in there, the bigger the tank you need. So we got to keep that in mind. But groups can work. I recommend more than three. Three minimum, I have heard of people being able to get away with it. And it will obviously help if you have a lot of dither fish in the tank. So keep them distracted so they're not just focused on each other too much. And once they settle in and they know who's boss, hopefully you can get it to work.
I agree 100% with you. If you're looking to keep more than one silver arowana, you're going to need a massive tank.
Definitely need a massive tank. And like I said, I do have six right now, so that sounds a little ridiculous, but I do plan on whittling them down to maybe three in the future. But I will grow the six out for a while. I have plenty of space for now. If they ever get too big, I have different homes that I could rehome them to.
Sounds good. So what would you say is a good tank mate for silver arowanas?
The first thing to keep in mind is something that isn't going to fit in their mouth, because they are predators. They will eat smaller fish. So that's to start. Other than that, they will not really pick on other fish. They don't seem to be bothered by other fish. You more have to worry about other fish picking on them. So a lot of times, things like fish like Oscars would be a bad choice. Oscars can get very nippy with arowana. Not saying that it doesn't work. For instance, I do have an Oscar with one of my silver arowanas right now. But I have had many problems in the past, and I know a lot of other people have had problems with Oscars and arowana. So you will have to more worry about the tank mate picking on the arowana. It's a shiny fish on the surface. So if you have any other fish that might be attracted to that, you would definitely have to worry about it. Generally, though, smaller cichlids and anything that's not aggressive will do just fine. Stingrays have been great. Arowana are great tank mates for stingrays. They're actually very capable or compatible with other fish.
I love keeping my arowanas with red hooks over dollars because the silver and red together looks awesome.
Oh, I like that combination. That's a great combination.
Stingrays are nice too.
Yeah, no, I know the stingrays aren't legal in Florida for you.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, I know.
So why would you recommend people to get a silver arowana if they have a large tank?
experience that comes with keeping arowana is not like a lot of other fish. So generally, I guess that's the best way I can say it is it's an experience. It's a really cool experience to be able to keep arowana. They're not just like some other cichlid or a common cichlid. It's a very cool oddball fish that you're guaranteed to enjoy. And if you keep an arowana in your home, anyone who comes to visit is always going to be drawn to the arowana. People love arowana that don't even know anything about fish. So it's such a cool fish to watch, and you learn a lot from them.
I agree 100% with you, and I think people are going to enjoy the majesty of the arowana.
Yes, definitely, because you can just be kind of hypnotized by watching them swim on the surface.
Awesome. So do you have anything else you'd like to talk about silver arowanas?
Well, the only other thing I would add is if you're going to get an arowana, make sure that the tank is set up properly for them. They are a topwater fish, and they use their barbells to feel vibrations on the surface of the water. So if you have a lot of movement on the water's surface, that can irritate the arowana a little bit. You might encourage jumping in that way, which is the last thing you really want to encourage if you're keeping an arowana in an aquarium. So to avoid stressing the arowana out too much, I recommend not having too much surface agitation, but you obviously don't want to restrict that in any way that might restrict oxygen levels for any other fish in the tank. But generally try to keep that down for them, or give them a side of the tank that has some still water, and you will notice that they will stay on that side of the tank. A lot of times you'll notice that they avoid big bubble walls and things like that, or filter returns, just because of those reasons. So that is a very common thing that I see that people do wrong when they set up the tank. And the other thing, which we talked about already, was the lids. If you can keep your water low, if you're not running any kind of overflow system for your tank, if you can keep the water level lower, then jumping isn't as big of a deal, and they're less likely to either jump out of the tank or less likely to hit themselves on the lid. And decorations are another thing that you want to keep in mind, that they can hurt themselves on, and these are not the type of fish that will hide, so they don't necessarily appreciate some big structure in the tank. It's just something that they could possibly spook themselves or spook and then hurt themselves on. So not having an overly crowded tank where they could possibly bump in, or anything sharp that they could jump and hurt themselves on. The first silver arowana I got, I lived in an apartment, and I was growing him out in a 125, but it was an old house. My apartment was in an old house, and the floor was bouncy. So when people would come over and the floor would move a little bit, the arowana would freak out and spook very easily. So something to keep in mind is that they do spook. They can hurt themselves. They can jump out. There's just things like that. You want to try to make them as comfortable as possible. Make sure the tank isn't in a location where people are going to be walking by, possibly scaring the fish too often. But in general, I think that's about it. We pretty much covered everything.
I agree. You did a fantastic job talking about silver arowanas, and I can't wait to get one again.
Yeah, you'll have to keep me updated when you get yours to get another one. When you get another one, I always love talking about arowana.
I'll definitely share some pictures with you and tell you when I get one.
Awesome. Yeah, and share in the United Arowana Facebook group too.
I definitely will. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I enjoyed talking about silver arowanas.
Thank you again for having me, Alex.
You're very welcome. Have a good Easter.
You too.
I want to thank my good friend Michael Terrell for coming on the show today to talk about silver arowanas. I see that we have a studio full of callers, so I'm going to go ahead and answer some of these calls. Hi, you're now live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. How are you today? Hi, you're now live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. How can I help you? Hi, you're now live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. How can I help you?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Do you have any advice on deep sea fish? Or anything that, like, anything of that nature?
A what fish?
Deep sea fish, like anglerfish or anything like that.
I've never actually kept them in an aquarium before.
Because I know those are really, they're really monstrous looking. I kind of wanted to keep my own aquarium so that way I could terrify my visitors.
That would be a good idea. They are kind of cool looking.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all types of monsters in there.
All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to today's episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. It was a wonderful Season 3 premiere and a great episode to kickstart our Season 3 and 2020. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. And thank you, everybody, who listened live. I appreciate your live listens. And for those of you who are catching this in the archives, thank you so much for tuning in. Don't miss our 500th episode coming up in April, where I'll be doing a prize giveaway, as well as having many multiple guests on the show. I'm planning on the 500th episode being about guests. And instead of having topics, I'll just have multiple guests on the show. So I look forward to that. With that being said, have a great rest of your Saturday night or whatever time it is when you listen to this show. Have a great rest of your day. And thank you so much for being a part of the show. And I'll see you on the next episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast as the countdown begins towards our 500th episode.
Hey guys, my name is Tyler Moon and I am a social media influencer and a current author. Not only do I make fun YouTube content, but I also just published a book called The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter. It is a mystery book where it's about a young man who moves from his home country to the United States to get assimilated to the hearing world, but unluckily he encounters an interpreter and he grew later to life, but then is later found missing and goes dead under mystery circumstances. Check out the book in store.bookbaby.com and search up The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter. Or you can go on Google and search up The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter and you can find a link there where you can find the hard copy version. Also, check out my YouTube channel in the link of my bio in @Paul_Aramuni, which is called Paul Aramuni Vlogs. Thanks, and I hope to see you guys along this journey with me.